Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the Percy Jackson Poseidon Podcast. This is episode 9, and we'll be going my final thoughts of the book, Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Titan's Curse. This is part 3 of the Titan's Curse review. So this kind of just goes over my thoughts of the characters and the story and the book as a whole. And so going into this book, I didn't really remember a lot. I knew about Blackjack, I knew about the Hunters, and that's really all I remembered of this book. And so, you know, I had gotten the beginning of the book with the Hunters confused with Athalia and the ending and everything. But it's been really fun kind of just discovering the story of this book. Feels like it was, you know, like I had never read it. So that was kind of cool. And I did not remember Bianca and Zoe Nightshade. So those were cool characters. I thought Nico had been introduced in the fourth book. So it's really fun for me as a surprise to kind of get all of this stuff into this book. And just kind of made it a lot more interesting. So, I didn't even remember Atlas was in this book. I mean, I just didn't remember hardly anything. I did remember that I remembered a scene at the Hoover Dam. I just didn't know it was this book. But, so it was a lot of fun going into this book not knowing what to expect. I think this book is structured narratively more like the first book was. In the sense that, you know, we're kind of thrown into this situation. Then we meet up at Camp Half-Blood. Then we get the quest from the Oracle. And then the group goes on the quest. And it's kind of more of a mystery as to who the general is. And then, you know, we end up back at Mount Olympus. Now, the second book also had a trio go on a quest. But it was structured kind of very differently. And as I mentioned in my review for that book, it felt more rushed. And things just didn't connect as well. And it wasn't even Percy's quest. It was somebody else's quest, and so there was no interesting prophecy to be revealed. And so this book, it doesn't feel rushed. I mean, certain spots are a little bit rushed, but it doesn't really feel rushed. But I will say we do kind of go to one too many locations in this book. I think we could have dropped the whole ski resort town part of it and just moved Grover communicating with Pan to, you know, another location of the book. I feel like we don't really need the ski resort town stuff. I just feel like that was just one too many locations, but it's fine. It doesn't really feel rushed. It just feels kind of like it was just thrown in there. I also think that it was kind of a missed opportunity for Percy, who's the son of Poseidon, to go to the Hoover Dam and not use his water powers. Like, that could have been fun and cool. But the other thing I liked was the slow reveal of the new prophecy by the Oracle. And, you know, one shall be lost in the land without rain, and ended up being Bianca. And then the Titan's Curse, one with Mistand, was Percy holding up the sky. And then one should perish at a parent's hand, was Zoe being killed by her father Atlas. So I do like that, the prophecy that we get in this one and how it plays out throughout the book. And also it kind of is interesting because Percy and Thalia both think that they're the ones that are going to die by the hand of their parent because they're a child of the Big Three. So it kind of ties in pretty well with all the characters and then everything and their character arcs. And so we get the way the prophecy plays out, which is cool. And I like having Grover back. We missed him in the second book and seeing kind of how he's changed since that second book, or even since the first book. He's definitely a lot more confident now in his skills as a satyr, and we see him, you know, continuing to follow his dreams to find Pan. You know, he still is a little bit of a comedic relief, but he's definitely more of a mature character, I think, in this book, and I really like that. We don't get much of Annabeth in this. They kind of do a swap with, you know, Grover was the one captured last book, and now Annabeth's captured this book, but that's okay. I do like the relationship between Percy and Thalia and how competitive they are, but yet how also similar they are, and that they end up kind of learning to respect each other and everything. And it's kind of similar to the relationship Percy and Annabeth had in the first book. Thalia is a strong female character, and I like her and everything, but, you know, she's very different from Clarice and Annabeth. And so I'm a bit sad to see her go off with the Hunters at the end of this. I wish we get a little bit more of her. Also, Zoe Nightshade was a cool character as well. And I liked her, and I liked, you know, that Percy, you know, had these dreams about her and a hero, which is later to be revealed, Hercules. And then that's why she hates men, because she was betrayed by Hercules, and that's why she joined the Hunters. So I do like that slow reveal as well. And then, of course, that's her kind of journey, is at the end of the book, she admits that not all men are terrible, that Percy's actually a good guy. She learns to trust and respect him. And then it's revealed that she's the daughter of Atlas, and that Artemis was taken to replace his position holding up the sky. And it's a good final battle scene, I think. I like it. It ties up all the mysteries and prophecies. So like Grover in the last book, we don't get much of Annabeth in this one, but what we do get is great. I do like her, you know, seeing her relationship progress with Percy and everything. And I do like, you know, meeting her dad and her stepmom and seeing that aspect of her life play out as well. And then we do get a little bit more of Luke being the villain in this. But, you know, I still don't really care about Luke. I don't think he really has done enough for me to care about him. But we do see his, like, almost desperation, you know, to have Thalia and Annabeth at his side. And that kind of, you know, is a little bit more of a character for him. But I still don't care about him being the villain. I don't care whether or not he should be redeemed. I think I'm kind of with Percy. Like, he's evil. He deserves to go off that cliff. But they do kind of like a fake death type of thing with him. And he is still alive. And so I'm not really sure what we're doing with Luke going into the next two books. I don't remember if he does get redeemed or anything. Or if he does die. I'm not really sure. But I think these books have done kind of a poor job of making Luke the villain. Because I think they want to put all that on Kronos, a villain that we have yet to see. And that's kind of one of the things I think these books have differentiated themselves from the Harry Potter books. Like, Voldemort was always the overarching villain that was behind the scenes, you know. But then he had his little minions, you know. In the first Harry Potter, he had, you know, Professor Quirrell, who wasn't really set up to be a villain, but then was revealed to be a villain. And that was a cool reveal. And then in the second book, you know, it was the Diary of Tom Riddle working, you know. And so they just kind of had a better way of handling, you know, even though Voldemort was this incorporeal overarching villain, similar to Kronos, they had a better way of handling the individual villains. Here, they just haven't handled Luke very well. Atlas as the general was kind of an interesting villain, but again, we don't really find out who he is until the end, so, and then he's not the general no more because he's back to holding up the sky. So I just think they really haven't handled the villain problem very well in these books. And while I vaguely remembered Bessie, the Ophiotaurus, I think I had gotten it confused with hippocampi. And so I thought Bessie was that hippocampi. But I do like Bessie, the Ophiotaurus. I like the, kind of brings out the softer side of Percy. And that reminds us why he's, you know, this good protagonist and hero of the series. You know, when the Olympians want to kill Bessie just to stop the prophecy, Percy says it's wrong to kill an innocent creature. You know, when the creature hasn't done anything, and it's actually our own undoing, we would have to kill the creature in order for anything to happen. So I do like that side, that relationship right there, and I like the introduction of Bessie in this book. I'm not sure if we get Bessie going forward, but I hope so. And we don't get a lot of Chiron in this one either, which is honestly kind of something that surprised me about these books, because I remembered him being a bigger mentor figure for Percy, kind of like Dumbledore and Harry Potter, but he's really not in these first three books very much. Kind of just bookends them a little bit, and I kind of want him to see, I would like him to have been more of a mentor towards Percy, more of a father figure type for Percy, somebody that Percy can really learn from and things. And so I'm a little disappointed. I'm not sure how much we get of Chiron in the next two books. I do like that we get a nice little scene of Dionysus helping them out in San Francisco. I think it's a good way to sort of humanize Dionysus as a character and not make us hate him so much again. So I like that. And then at the end of the book, we do see that Clarice had returned from her quest. It was mentioned earlier in the book she had gone off on a quest and had been missing for a month. But she is fine. She returned from a quest with big news, but we don't learn what that is. So I'm hoping we learn what it was she was up to at the beginning of the fourth book. Because I like Clarice as a character. I want a little bit more of her, and I kind of want her to see if she has a character arc, you know, because she's the daughter of Ares, and she was trying to make him proud of her in the last book, and that's why she hates Percy. So I kind of want to see her character come a little bit more full circle. And then by the end of the book, we learn that Nico is the son of Hades, but he ends up running away, so we don't know where Nico ends up. I hope we find out who got them out of the Lotus Hotel and see, and I want to see how all this plays out, you know, because it was whoever got them out of the hotel, probably Luke or somebody Luke hired, I don't remember, but it was probably another way for them to try to control the prophecy to introduce another child to the Big Three, because Thalia removed herself by joining the Hunters, so she'll never turn 16. But Percy is only 2 years away from turning 16, but Nico's like 10 in this or something, and so he's like 6 years away. And so I don't think Luke and Kronos are going to wait 6 years for this kid to turn 16 to control the prophecy. So I still think the prophecy about a child of the Big Three is still about Percy. And obviously this is his book series, so it would make sense if it was about Percy. But honestly, I don't really remember. It could go either way for me. I don't really remember. But I do think this book does a good job following the sort of standard quest storyline that we had in the first book. And it ties it, definitely brings in the overall story arc of this, you know, Big Three child prophecy thing. And I like that. Whereas the first two books felt a little bit more like standalone books, in that they kind of wrap everything up nice and neatly at the end. This one, I feel like you need to know where it's going. And so I kind of like that. And it definitely feels like it's bridging the first two books with the last book. So, and it does a good job of also having its own storyline as well. And even though I didn't remember the events of this book, not really at all, I gotta say I really did enjoy it a lot. And in contrast to me remembering that I loved Sea of Monsters, and then I read it again, and I was like, it's not as good as I thought. I didn't remember this book, and I really don't remember the next two books either, so I'm hoping that those are good as well, because I actually did enjoy this one more than I remembered it, because I didn't remember it at all. But I really did enjoy this one, and this kind of gives me some more excitement of going into the next two books. So I am looking forward to that. And Percy doesn't get a huge character arc in this. He's still kind of just, but he still proves himself to be the hero that we know he is. You know, he's the good guy. He's you know, wants to help people, save people. But, he's a quick thinker. You know, he's quick with the sword and stuff. And he's brave and everything. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a something there with him and Annabeth. It's not really a storyline, though. But I think it's definitely trying to push some sort of character arc between the two of them. And so I do like what we get with Percy here. And I think it kind of, a little bit of his character arc, I think, in this is, at the beginning, he wasn't chosen for the quest, and that kind of hurt him, like, his feelings a little bit. I think he kind of got the sort of, you know, idea in his head that he was, like, you know, this chosen hero, and then when he wasn't chosen for the quest, he was like, whoa, you know, he had to be humbled a little bit. And I think that's kind of what this book is about, is that, yes, he's a hero, but he's not the only hero. And so I kind of think that's what his story arc in this one is about. And I kind of like that. And, you know, because there was also Thalia, and there's Zoe, and, you know, Grover and Annabeth. And they're all heroes in their own way. And so, and it's really working as a team that they do their best work and can be more effective on these quests. And so I like that aspect of the book. I do think there's maybe one too many location stops in this. Like, I think we go to Washington, and then we go to, then they're on a train, and then we go to a ski resort in New Mexico, and then we go to Arizona, and then the Hoover Dam, and then San Francisco. And I think the first book had quite a bit of stops as well, but this one sort of sounded like too many. And we didn't really get a whole lot of new mythological creatures in this. We did get the Nemean lion, which was cool, and the Romanthian boar, which is cool. But then there was just like general vague skeleton warriors that they were fighting all the time, which is not as cool. So I wish we maybe would have gotten a couple. I mean, if we're going to go to all these locations, there should be a new monster at each location, not these skeleton warriors. And I still think it's a missed opportunity to not have Percy use his water powers at the Hoover Dam. That would have been cool. But oh well. So anyway, I really did enjoy this book. There's not a whole lot that I have problems with. I would say maybe, again, it feels like too many locations. Luke, I don't think, is a great villain still, which is still a problem. I think we still need to establish more of Chiron. But overall, this is still a really good book. So, and I do like that we get to meet more gods. And so in the first book, we get the Greek gods. We meet Dionysus. We meet Ares. we meet Hades, Zeus, and Poseidon. And in the second book, we meet Hermes, and I think Circe is maybe like a minor god, I'm not sure. But that's really it for the second book. But then this book, we kind of get a lot of new gods. We get the A's, as I call them. So we meet Artemis, Apollo, Aphrodite, Athena, Titan Atlas. And then we also meet sea god Nereus. And then we meet a couple other gods, or briefly see a couple other gods on Mount Olympus as well. But we don't really get to meet them. But we meet Hermes again and stuff. And so we get to meet more of the gods in this one, which I think is kind of cool. And I do like everything on Mount Olympus. And so I do like when the book kind of leans into the Greek mythology side of this and how it plays into our real world without, like, actually contradicting anything in our real world. So I do like that. And so I think there's a lot of good in this book. I can't really find too many flaws in it. I think it's definitely better than the second book, which I would not have said before I had started reading these. So far, I still think the first book is the best of the first three so far. We'll see. I remember liking the fourth book, Battle of the Labyrinth, and I don't remember the fifth book at all, but I think I didn't like it. But so we'll see how I rank all these books when I'm done with them. But so far, I would go book one, book three, book two, which is not what I would have gone before I went into this. I would have said book two was the best, but actually it's not so far. It was so rushed, I feel like. It was just so rushed. And Luke is still a problem villain for me. And I still don't like that we introduce these cool female characters and then do nothing with them. Or like Clarice, we didn't do anything with her in the last book. And then in this one we get Zoe and Bianca and Thalia, and then they're just gone by the end of the book, which I don't like either. I would like us to keep some of these awesome female characters around. But also, where are the male characters? Like, we got Nico, but, like, he's gone by the end of the book, too. So, I would like us to keep some of the side new characters around a little bit longer. Give them a little bit more to do. A little bit more of a character arc. Not just dispose of them so quickly. But we'll see where the next two books go. And that's going to be it for my review of Percy Jackson and Olympians, The Titan's Curse. So stay tuned to the podcast for the next episode, where we'll start Percy Jackson and Olympians, The Battle of the Labyrinth, which I remember liking. So thank you all for listening to the podcast. This has been the Percy Jackson, Son of Poseidon podcast. And until next time, bye, seaweed brain.